Hey folks, welcome to the Rambling Runner Podcast, and today we are doing a special episode. I'm here with my friend and fellow co-coach at McCurdy Trained, Laura Galeazzo, to talk about the Boston Marathon. You may not know this, but today they put out basically what the qualifying standard is, the buffer, if you will, of the people who applied to the Boston Marathon, but who at this point were accepted into the race, and those people who unfortunately were not accepted into the race. Got the tier system, right? You have to qualify and then you have to apply. And at that point, you have to figure out if like your apply was denied or your apply application was accepted. And today we found out the buffer is 5 minutes and 29 seconds. The second biggest buffer of all time. The biggest buffer was in 2021, where the field was capped at 20,000 runners because of COVID. But this is basically the biggest buffer, the biggest non-COVID buffer of all time. We had 11,000 people who applied that weren't able to be accepted into the field, 22,000 people who qualified and were accepted. And I can't wait to talk about this with Laura. Laura, we're not going to take a deep dive into the stats. We're going to talk with someone at Boston, hopefully next week, about this. So that will be a fun episode, a little fun with numbers episode, and to kind of set the stage for like why they have all these numbers. But today is about something a little bit more holistic, maybe an evergreen episode about how runners can approach this sort of day, the Boston Marathon experience, and just the goal setting that comes along with qualifying for Boston. We're talking about the people who tried to get a qualifying time but didn't. The people who today probably didn't feel that great. The people who got the qualifying time but were not accepted into the field. And then the people who qualified for Boston and were accepted and were hopefully will be able to run next April. So Laura, yes, first of all, thank you so much for coming on to talk about this.
Thank you for having me.
So first thing we're going to do is do a little like, all right, what's up with the Boston Marathon and how come it gets like so much, I guess, popularity and so much buzz around this sort of thing? It's kind of commonly known, at least in my world, as kind of like the amateur running Olympics, especially from a marathon perspective. And so many people goal set around this, Laura. You've been coaching athletes for a long time. You're a high level runner as well. Is that kind of how you view the Boston Marathon?
Yeah, I definitely would. I think in our sport, it gives people something to shoot for because you've got the Olympics, you know, you've got your Olympics, but that's so far out of reach. Whereas if you give somebody a goal like this, where it's a prestigious race, there's time standards, it gives somebody something to work for that maybe is within arm's reach versus the Olympics being, hey, across the country type arm's reach. So I think it gives people that same level of accomplishment without it being that same scale. That doesn't really make sense, but you know what I was going for.
Absolutely. And I feel like there's less of a genetic component to this, right? Like qualifying for the, even if just taking the like participation in the Olympics out of it, just even qualifying for the Olympic trials and the marathon, obviously you have to work your absolute tail off for a very long time. But in addition to that, there is the genetic component as well. Whereas the BQ, it takes no less work for a lot of people, but the genetic barrier to entry into that race, into like, you know, race, I mean, in the more general sense, in terms of reaching for that goal, the genetic component certainly is much lessened compared to that OTQ race.
Yeah, that, and I would also say, like, the genetic component, and also the privilege doesn't feel the right word, but I think it is in a way of, you know, the people who are trying to qualify and run Boston are your everyday runners, like the people you interview on the podcast all the time. We work full-time jobs. We have kids. We have other commitments. And a lot of the people who are trying to, and granted for the trials, a lot of those people also have those things. But then there's quite a few of them that, you know, they have sponsorships or it is their job and they still work very hard. They just don't have as many things to work around. So I think this is a good attainable goal for people. Though sometimes we take that too far. I say we, because I remember how one track minded I got when I was first trying to qualify for Boston. So I can say that.
Right. And then you get the age graded component as well, right? That's one of the nice things about Boston in terms of, you know, once you hit age 35, you have these 5-year age groups that they age up. So usually it's a 5 or 10 minute increase from, you know, from 35 to 40 to 45 to 50. Some people just assume it's 5 minutes for each age gap. That is not true. Some of those bumps are 10 minutes, and that's also changed over time. But right now it's either a 5 or a 10 minute jump, depending on the age you're in. So especially for masters runners, this really is like they might have aged out of the Olympic trials, in terms of like their ability to get there, but this can be, the main goal for them. With that said, it's still incredibly hard. We call the amateur running Olympics for a reason. For amateurs, it does feel like the Olympics. This is an incredibly hard thing, and it's been hard for a long time. In part, again, we should say, because this race is capped. So this race is capped at 30,000 runners. With every popular race, there are certain components that come into this in terms of like, how does a race want to allow runners in? So Boston, there's three ways. There's people who can qualify and apply, that we're going to talk about today. There are people who will raise a very significant amount of money for charity to get in. And they're the elite runners who are given a spot in the field and are often paid to do that, right? So they'll get like an appearance fee and they'll be coming. So in this race, the race is capped at 30,000, and there's just a shade over 22,000 people who applied and were accepted to run the race, meaning there's, you know, roughly 8,000, you know, a little north of 8,000 people who will be joining the race in terms of the elite field plus the people who are raising money to get into the field. So overall, a lot of runners.
Yeah. Also, I think it is worth noting for people that it's, in addition to those charity runners, there's also a significant amount of bibs that I think the EAA terms them as like invitational bibs, which are not just your elites, but your sponsors. We have a new sponsor this year with Bank of America, so that probably plays a role too. But your sponsors, every year you're going to have runners who represent brands and stuff, but that's what helps get those sponsors to want to do it. You give them some bibs that they can give people. And that accounts for, I believe, like at least 2,000 of the spots. I think it's like 6,000 charity and then like 2,000 for local running clubs who help with volunteering and sponsor bibs and your elites and your pros, obviously. But
right.
you have to give some of those.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll talk about that when we talk with someone from Boston about the exact number of that. But last year I had a few runners come on the show who were gifted bibs through the through Amazon. So Amazon sponsored. Mm-hmm. And then Amazon was gifting bibs out to diverse running groups all across the country. And then they gave them to some of their runners who were in a position to make the most of that experience. Again, we say this to say, this is how people can get into the race. And this year, a third of the people who qualified and applied were not accepted. And that can be a brutal experience. We'll talk about that in a second. But I just want to put this out there because this is incredibly hard. And there's a lot of people who will spend a long time, a decade or more, trying to qualify for Boston who won't. And there's people who did that this year. So let's talk about this group first, okay? The people who have as their stretch goal qualifying for the Boston Marathon. And this can be people of any age, okay? This is this is their main goal of training. They really want to do this. This past marathon, you know, Boston Marathon window, they went out there, they raced, and either they just missed or there was an injury or there was some crazy weather, but their goal was the Boston Marathon. So today wasn't a big day for them because they already knew they never applied because they didn't hit the qualifying time. But this was their main thing. And for a lot of people, that driver of qualifying for Boston, it can really be a super motivating thing to get there and to, you know, peak, to really work through the training and to just basically get out the door every day, especially for those folks like you mentioned who are, you know, have a hectic life. But for them, this is the stretch goal. And oftentimes these people are running. They're not in running groups. They're just, you know, hammering away mile after mile on the treadmills in the dark, doing their thing, often in silence. And, you know, this is the big goal for them. Again, it could be early in their running career. It could be later in their running career. You coach a lot of the athletes who are trying to do this. For those folks who are yearning to get that Boston Marathon, how do you try to that Boston Marathon qualifying time and are very aware of it as they go through their marathon and training cycles? How do you try to approach the conversation of, you know, utilizing the motivation that comes with a stretch goal while not being so fixated on it that it becomes like this like thorn in their brain that they can't quite take out, and you know, it becomes like this all-consuming thing where it goes from motivating to all of a sudden potentially demotivating if they don't see the success they want, or if it's not going according to their perceived sense of a timeline that should be associated with that goal.
Yeah, and I mean, I have experience with it myself. I didn't, you know, it took me a couple marathons to qualify and, you know, fell on my face a couple times in the process, which was actually probably the best thing for me because it forced me to learn. But I think one of the big conversations I have with athletes a lot is, let's see where the training takes us. Especially if they're in maybe a closer range where they're within striking distance, they're, you know, maybe 2 to 10 minutes off that goal. It's kind of like, let's see where the training takes us, because I don't know about you, but like very often I'll get athletes who ask at the very beginning of a training cycle, well, what's my goal? And I'm like, well, I don't know. And that isn't to tell them that I'm not paying attention or that I don't know what I think they can run, but a lot can happen in, you know, 6 months or 3 months or things like that. And so I think kind of trying to get people to focus on the process a little bit more of, hey, let's set some goals for this month for training. We're going to run X days a week, or let's register for a couple races between now and the marathon to use as goals to check in along the way, which is a great way to see where you're at and set realistic goals for that marathon. But I think it also pulls some of the focus off of the goal marathon being the be all end all. Trying to encourage their control over the process of and learning and setting other goals too, instead of it just being, well, the only goal is Boston. That's great, but we have to set some other goals along the way to get there. And I think by doing that is recognizing, hey, you have this goal, but I also want to help you do these other things too. So you're not diminishing how they feel about the one thing, but just saying, let's kind of not put all our eggs in one basket kind of a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have found too that being hyper-focused on the OT, the BQ goal, when you're pretty close to it, can also be, and this is a little tragic in a way, at least from a running perspective, can actually limit growth because yes, they're so focused on that goal. So all of a sudden they become very type A about their times. They get like super intense about like, all right, how am I progressing? In addition to that, like their growth trajectory might be way past that BQ goal, but they get so hyper-focused on it that they kind of like bend towards it instead of shooting past it in a way.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like everything is focused on that number. They're hyper-focused about like their training in terms of their splits and things like that. And they start acting in a way that ultimately doesn't serve them well and limits growth in terms of like, again, maybe taking the approach that they took prior to coming close to that BQ goal that allowed them to improve in terms of like, you know, approaching it with fun, but you know, serious when you're doing it, but also approaching it with like a sense of joy, wonder, and fun that comes along with it. Not taking yourself too seriously. Not, you know, if a race doesn't go well, a workout doesn't go well, like fretting, what does this mean? Not having every week or every workout being a referendum on your growth or your potential, or trying to like, you know, distill, what does this mean in the bigger scope of things? Like, just chill. Everything's fine. Like, yeah, this is incredibly hard to do, this goal, but by going super type A and trying to like distill exactly what everything means in service to that goal ultimately does you more harm than good.
I agree fully.
Yeah. And I think also when you get that sense of like, okay, I want to reach this goal, oftentimes there's a couple other things that can happen. People can start to be very aware of other folks who are getting that goal. And they can be, okay, at first, again, there's some elements of this because being positive, right? If you're cheering on friends and family or running group members who are, you know, setting themselves up for success or maybe getting that BQ and doing it with a full and open heart, that's wonderful. And that's a big positive, and that can help you. But if you're approaching it and like there's like the part of the thing that you're saying to them in terms of that's supportive, but the part that you have inside, that's more, hey, like, I wish that was me. How come I'm not getting these results? And it's much more like, what about me kind of focused? Then that sort of thing can bring you down. And I think that the competition or the comparison game that can emanate from a BQ search can be really tough. And again, it can be also be very limiting. These are the sorts of things that can throw people off track. If like a little thing like pops up and they're all of a sudden they're not on their own self-perceived schedule of how things should be going, they get derailed. And all of a sudden, instead of being like a 2% little thing that we work around, we'll get back on track. All of a sudden, like the train is in like completely off the mountain. And like, you know, they're not only are they physically, you know, in kind of a rehab mode, but mentally and emotionally, they're in the same spot, if not even worse.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's kind of why I said, like, trying to get people to focus on the process a little bit, because from my own experience, the biggest breakthroughs that I had came from not when I was so hyper-focused on a time goal, but when I just focused on being better. I focused on the process of, I'm going to run more. I'm going to dial in my nutrition. I'm going to make sure that, hey, I'm not skipping, like, yes, there are reasons to miss a run, but I'm not skipping runs just because I don't feel like it, kind of a thing. Just committing to the process and being consistent. And I think some of my biggest jumps really came from when the time was less of the focus and instead the training cycle itself. And that, like, my first time that I officially qualified for Boston, I qualified with alert. It was a huge breakthrough for me. And a big piece of that was I kind of had let go of it and said, well, I just want to see how good I can be. And then it was so funny because I almost felt a little let down after, because I was like, well, what's my goal now? I qualified for Boston. What's the new goal? Because that's runners. What's next? And I realized how much I had limited myself thinking, oh, well, that's the pipe dream of qualifying for Boston. And I was like, I just did that. Like, I can do more. And it's getting athletes to focus on the day-to-day things and what they're in control of and to take control of their life and not be, for lack of a word, better victims of circumstances. Like, go out and make things happen. Yes, we have strings of bad luck that happens too, but I think putting the control and the belief in them in the process and having them buy into that is really where it helps, because like you said, otherwise it can just, you can trend the wrong direction when you too fixate on the time so much.
And you can also lose sight of the fact that you might be running incredibly well. Again, qualifying for Boston is hard. And it needs to be, because you're competing against runners from all around the world, yeah, who are trying to compete for like these 22,000 spots, right? At least that's what the number was this year. And it's going to be pretty similar in other years. So like you look at, like, again, I'm bringing up some stats from marathonhandbook.com, but like the average marathon is roughly an hour slower than what you see at these Boston Marathon cutoffs, qualifying times, I should say. So the qualifying times. So like, it's like 3 hours for a male, you know, 18 to 34 is the Boston Marathon qualifying time for that group. The average marathon for that group is 4:01. Right. So it's an hour slower. So if you're running a 3:25 marathon, you might be like, oh, my God, I'm nowhere near the BQ time. You're still doing great, man. Like, you're way over the average. All right. And I can do this for every group. I'll just leave it there, because there's no reason for me to keep repeating myself through 20 different age groups and two different genders and the non-binary group as well. But like, again, this is hard. So you could be doing incredibly well and be nowhere near the BQ time. That is totally normal. Those are not like these opposed ideas.
Yeah. And how many times, and I did it myself my first few marathons, but how many times did I do it, or do I have athletes who, well, I PR'd, but I missed the BQ. I'm like, knock out that we can address those feelings at a separate time, but let's start with the fact that you just ran a 7-minute PR or a 2-second PR or whatever it was. Celebrate. You got faster. You got better. You're making steps forward. You can feel things about missing that, but you still have to celebrate those wins. Otherwise, you're losing sight of what the goal actually is.
Right. And speaking of goals, you know, in the end, we can have more than one goal. This is not a completely polarized topic, but think about, are your goals intrinsic or extrinsic, right? Are they internally you focused in your process and all the things that you mentioned before? Or is it extrinsic? Again, be honest with yourself. And it's okay if you have a couple extrinsic goals or you have extrinsic motivations for your goals. You might not have extrinsic goals, but you know what? The motivations behind the goals is a better way of saying it, right? Are your goals extrinsic? I mean, they're the motivations behind them extrinsic in terms of like the status of qualifying for Boston, be able to say that you did it.
Yeah.
Again, be honest with yourself. Is that a portion of it? Okay.
And that's okay if it is.
Right. I'm not judging here. These are all normal things that can pop up in your mind. Okay. So is it like, again, the idea of like, hey, the status behind it, right? Or, hey, I know people who've done this and I feel like I'm as good of runners as them and I want to be able to do it too, right? These are my training partners or my friends or whoever, right? Just the idea of like, hey, this is what the best of the best can do from an amateur running perspective. And I want to be one of the best of the best. So like, I want to be in that club. That's how I view myself. And I think I should be able to do that. Again, that has kind of an intrinsic piece to it, but it's more extrinsic because you're basing it on other people and other factors that are outside of your control versus the intrinsic side of like, okay, like I really want to get better. I want to see what I'm capable of. I want to see like non-racing goals, right? Can I run, can I run like $200 miles this month? Can I do that 12 months in a row? Can I hit 250? Can I do that 12 months in a row? Right? Can I make sure that like I approach my workouts and I don't like, you know, I don't go in the tank if I don't hit a rep? Can I not look at my watch during a workout? Right? That doesn't completely necessitate me looking at a watch in terms of like the pacing of it. And I'm just going to be focused more on the time. Like how long, all right, I'm doing 8x1 minute on, 1 minute off. All right, like just looking at my watch from a timing, but I don't care what the pace is, right? There's a lot of different ways of approaching goals and even more motivations behind those. But I think you have to figure out what are my motivations here? Because the more extrinsic those motivations are, we can talk about this is going to happen in this bucket and the next bucket that we get into, then the more not getting the goal is going to feel like a failure. Because you're focusing on things that are outside of your control often, and it's just going to feel like the brutal nature of not getting it is going to feel so much different as opposed to like, hey, the intrinsic side of things, like, hey, my goal was if I can run 200 miles a week for 12 months, I think I can put myself in a position to qualify for Boston. And that could absolutely be true. And maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't, but say it doesn't happen. You're like, hey, well, I still did X, Y, Z. This was great. So am I bummed that I didn't qualify for Boston? Yes. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm not going to completely derail myself, my training, my relationship with running even because it didn't happen. Because I can also zoom out and say, look at all these other things that did happen that I am proud of. And these were also goals.
Yeah. And I think extrinsic goals can help get you out the door. Mm-hmm. But I think the intrinsic goals are what keep getting you out the door day after day. Like it's the consistency comes from those extrinsic goals can be more fleeting of because they don't have deep roots of those intrinsic ones. I think they can flail a little bit more and you can be like, well, no, I don't need to do this. I just won't qualify for Boston. Whereas those other ones are like, I just want to see how good I can be. Like that is a true intrinsic goal. That's going to get you out the door when it's dark, when it's cold, when it's rainy, when you're tired. Those are the motivations that are going to keep you going and keep you going for a very long time. And you're more likely to achieve those types of goals because they're deeply rooted in something that you're, like you said, you're in control of. You're controlling what you can, but also something that's that much more meaningful to you because it's not based on just one thing.
Yeah, and I love to use, that's a great metaphor to use. I think another one that I always like is like the bonfire metaphor, or like the, just like the, you know, whatever fire you want, right? Yeah. It doesn't be bonfire. It can be a little smaller. Right?
I grew up on a dirt road. I had bonfires all the time. So that works.
There we go. Right. Like, I feel like extrinsic motivations are like lighter fluid, right? It can burn hot and it can really like set the thing ablaze, but it's not going to last as long as you'd want it to look, right? I think that, you know, high quality kindling, again, might not have that initial surge, that huge bump in the beginning, but ultimately will stand the test of time and will last a lot longer. Again, mixing both together also isn't the worst thing in the world either. But I think that ultimately, if you can find ways to have intrinsic motivators be the primary thing that drives you, I think you're going to set yourself up for the kind of long-lasting success that ultimately will help you get those goals that could have extrinsic motivators behind them, but ultimately that intrinsic, you know, to bring this metaphor to its breaking point, that intrinsic fuel will end up getting you to the places that you want to go.
Yeah, and I think the other part is you're going to enjoy it so much more because it is so deep-rooted, and because when you're doing that, you're not so hyper-focused on just one extrinsic goal or whatever it is. You're going to enjoy the process. You're going to be like, man, I missed that PQ, but man, I got that PR and I ran 200 miles that month. And you're going to enjoy it more because you're able to celebrate the wins along the way.
Okay. Let's go to the next group. So these are the folks that reach the Boston Marathon qualifying standard to apply to get into the race, but ultimately were not accepted into the race. So this year, there was roughly 11,000 people who fell into that group. Again, the buffer was 5 minutes and 29 seconds. To put this in perspective, again, this is the second biggest buffer of all time, but the largest group of applicants who got denied. So roughly 11,000 people. That's a huge number. A huge number. And it's a testament to two things. Just how popular the Boston Marathon is. Right? Because not everyone who qualifies for the Boston Marathon applies to get into the Boston Marathon, right? It's not like everyone who qualified everywhere applied, but the fact that so many people did is a testament to how popular the race is. Secondly, it's a testament to how well people are running. Congratulations, right? Like, let's go step by step here, okay? These people in this group, again, we're going to paint with a broad brush here, but probably had a really joyous marathon experience during the marathon window leading into this year's Boston, right? Maybe they'd qualified for Boston before. Maybe they hadn't. Maybe they didn't have a PR that day. But anyway, they ran incredibly well to meet the Boston Marathon qualifying time. So that experience obviously was a super high. They were probably very aware that they reached that qualifying time. And whether their buffer was 3 seconds or 5 minutes, like, that joy in the moment, again, painting with a broad brush, was probably, you know, if not euphoric, somewhere close to it. And for those people, first of all, congratulations, because you are an incredible athlete, an incredible runner who's been working very hard and deserves all the accolades for the marathon you ran, whether you applied for Boston or not. Again, I want to repeat that because it's so important, because when you finish that race, that next race was not a part of that experience and shouldn't be factored into how well you felt about your race experience.
Yep. And like you said, that's an hour that, you know, the time standards are over an hour faster than the average times. Like, that's, you met that time standard. That's how much faster you are than the average person out there.
And think about it, not just the average person, the average marathoner. Any marathoner is putting in incredibly hard work. Running a marathon is hard. It is hard at any pace. So you're an hour faster than the average marathoner, and the average marathoner is kicking ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something to celebrate for sure. Like, and it's hard because even if you qualify by a small amount, I know most people at this point are kind of like, oh, but I don't think it's enough, so it takes away from some of the excitement. I'm like, no, stop. Celebrate this win.
Right, because it makes me so sad to have someone like run so well on that day, but because Boston is on their radar, they have to immediately put it in context to the Boston Marathon. Whereas like you're almost like, again, this is impossible, but like it, you'd almost be better off like almost assuming like, hey, I'm not even applying to Boston this year, right? Like if you finish that marathon again, no matter what your buffer was in terms of like trying to figure out like, all right, did I have enough time? Assume that you were going to be running the LA Marathon or Long Beach or Richmond or whatever, right? Like how would have you viewed that experience? You don't have to juxtapose it onto something else that is not at all related to what you just did. Right. So I think that again, it makes me sad thing that someone would finish marathon and automatically be like, but it wasn't this, it wasn't that. It's like, oh, but did you try any less hard? Right. Did you like, right. All of those things that come with the highs and lows of the marathon experience and no one runs the perfect race. But I think it's, you know, it's important to remember how you felt when you finished that race, how you felt about your own day, your effort, how you pushed through the hard things, the mindset you were able to utilize when things got tough and persevere through it. Because ultimately, that is what this is all about. Whether you qualify for Boston or not, or never even apply to the race itself, I think it's important to harness those moments because those are the lasting things that are important and the parts of the journey that ultimately that we should be able to reflect on with joy and with just like just positive vibes in general.
Yeah, and this is backing up a tiny bit, but that goes to, even with the training cycle, I tend to tell athletes to sit down before their goal race. So like I'm running a marathon this weekend. So today I took a half an hour. I sat down and I went through my training logs. I scrolled through VDOT. I wrote down a few workouts that gave me confidence that I want to keep in mind. But I also wrote down the things I did well, the things I really liked, and the things to work on for next time. And I think having people do that before a race can color that. Because if they had a bad race, they're like, well, this whole training cycle was awful. And I was like, no, right. you ran the best you've ever run just because it didn't happen on race day. So like trying to think about the training cycle as a whole and then that race without the context of what's next, like you're saying, without comparing it to Boston. Getting people to kind of almost separate things a little bit, which it's really hard. I get it. But that can be really helpful so you can still celebrate other things.
That's a great point. I'm so glad you said that because it's absolutely true. And whether you had the best day, the medium day, or a horrific day, there are certainly horrific days to be had on a marathon course. Yeah. It doesn't change what happened before it, right? This is kind of like, it's similar to what I said before, but you crystallize it nicely. Like what happens on that race day doesn't change anything that happened that preceded it. Nor should you view what happened before in a different lens, knowing what you know after the marathon experience, right? Yep. Like that long run 6 weeks out that you felt awesome about, it isn't any less awesome now, right? It's just as awesome. You just had a tough race, right? So being able to view these things, I think, is important. Now, let's get to the folks who got that qualifying time. We're so excited. I finally did it. And then today, they found out that, unfortunately, while, yes, you qualified for Boston, you got the time, you got the goal, all those things, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to run the race because of how many people applied. And it's just, they cap the number. That's the way it goes. And again, with these popular races, they're popular. A lot of people are going to try to get in. And there's no perfect way for these races to handle it. There's just different ways that they handle it. And ultimately, 11,000 people today are probably pretty bummed. And maybe some more than others, right? The people who are, you know, my friend Peter Bromka, he coaches an athlete. They thought they were safe because they had a 5 minute and 19 second buffer. But they're 9 seconds off, right? There's other people who had maybe a 3 second buffer who were like, you know what? Past 2 years, everyone got in. It might be this year too. Who knows, right? Again, we're not going to go through the litany of people and how close they were or not close they were. But ultimately, it's a heartbreaking experience. And I totally understand that. At the same time, it doesn't change what preceded it. In addition, I think it's also important to lay out your why again, whether you've thought about this or not, maybe it's reflecting on your why or thinking about it for the first time, but your why when it comes to Boston, right? Was it about, hey, getting that qualifying standard because that's where I want to get to and viewing that as the goal. Again, that number. If that was the goal, then what happened today, while a huge bummer, doesn't change the fact that you reached your goal, right? And like, it also plays into part of like, okay, maybe your goal was to like, again, was to run Boston, but it wasn't to like race Boston. It was to like enjoy the experience of Boston. And there's nothing wrong with that either. And you won't be able to do that, but you'll be able to have, again, maybe, again, you don't want to hear this today, and I understand, but maybe there's other races in the spring that are also really good races. This thing, popular races are very popular. That doesn't mean they're the best races inherently, right? Like, yep. There are other marathons that are just as good of an experience as running Boston. They just maybe aren't as well known. And so maybe that wasn't on your radar. But you could end up having a wonderful spring experience at a marathon that while you wanted to run Boston, you didn't. You ran this other race, but you might look back at that 3 years later and be like, you know what? I'm so glad that I ran, name a race, right? Let's say the Eugene Marathon, right? That's in April as well. Let's just say Eugene, right? I ran Eugene. I got to finish at Hayward Field. I got to see history in the making. I got to run Prees Trail, do all this stuff. Again, that you wouldn't be able to do if you ran Boston, so on and so forth. So I think understanding your why and how running Boston plays into it is really important. I don't want to go on a complete monologue here. I'll throw this over to you, Laura. But I think that and we'll talk about different other stages in this group. But I think first of all is understanding your why and putting today in context with that why and not getting swept up in the tide of, oh my God, I was one of the 11,000 that didn't make it. This is the worst.
Yeah, and I think one thing that it also depends on their mindset of where they're at with it. One thing that's really important to remember, or that I've definitely told athletes over the years, is even though it feels personal, it's not.
Oh, yeah.
And because the majority of those people are feeling, it feels so personal because they worked so freaking hard to qualify. And so not getting in feels personal, but it's the BAA saying we have a limited field size. We have to get, you know, permits from the town. We don't have to go through all of the reasons why the field size is what it is. It is not feasible to let everybody in. And, you know, 22,000 runners didn't go run faster than those other 11,000, just despite those 11,000. Like, it feels personal, but it's not. So sometimes getting, kind of reminding people of that, I feel like, can be a little bit helpful, because like, your goals are personal, but you getting denied from this was not. So that's what you're saying, of go back to your why and like, okay, wait a second, deep breath. Why do I want to do this? What's getting me out the door? You know, what can I do? Kind of focus on those things and try. And again, it's really hard, especially today. It's so raw. I was pretty much in tears making a call today to let somebody know. And
they were close, right? They were super close.
Yes. So I had two, one of them was under a minute. So we unfortunately knew that it was not likely. But my sister, she had over a four minute buffer. Like, we really thought like we'd be good. And, you know, it's really hard. And I took it just as personally, I mean, for any of my athletes, but also especially being my sister, of it feels so personal, but it's not. And it being denied is not personal, I should say. Like, take that part out of it. So then you can focus on, okay, take a second. It's raw. But now let's go to what you're saying of why do you want to do this? What do you want to get out of it? What positive experiences came out of the process to get here? And then how can we take those going forward?
Right. And I think oftentimes you'll have folks, and again, my DMs, over the years, I've had plenty of DMs come in and people like, again, and I don't blame them for this. This is just part of, for some people, like the grieving process, right? Especially if it's something they've been working on for a long time, is that they're looking, again, they're not saying this, but they're clearly looking for someone to blame for what happened, right? What I was wronged, who's to blame, right? And they're looking externally for that. Not that they should look internally, but say a lot of times, like looking at the DMs I've received over the years, like this, the BAA this, the BAA that, or this gender that, this age range this age range that. Again, we're not gonna litigate the process here. We're just not going to. I want this to be an evergreen episode that people can use, you know, no matter what their race is, or for Bostons in the future. But ultimately, people will have that instinct to look for someone to blame. And that's, again, understandable. And when you're going through a grieving type process, that's oftentimes part of it. And I'm not gonna sit here and judge you for going through that. I just want to say, as quickly as you can go through that phase, try to get through it, because there is no perfect way of running these races in terms from an organizational perspective. That's why so many of them approach it so differently. Also, if you had a race, you might choose a different method to choose runners. Again, and maybe that's valid, but it's not any more or less valid, maybe, than some of the ways that are being used. Again, the people at Boston, the people at BA didn't get into this because they hated runners and they hated running, right?
Like, not personal.
This is their dream job, and this is a brutal thing for them too. They're not like this Ivy League, you know, admissions counselor who's they're looking for reasons to accept somebody, not reasons to like reject them, right? This is not that. They would love to accept all these people. This is why they got into this business. But try to resist the urge to look for someone to blame or to say, well, the male under 35 time is harder to get than the women's under 35 time. And and maybe there are statistical analysis you can do that would prove that. Okay. With that said, it's also an hour better than the average time, just like the women's time is an hour better than their time. Okay. In addition to that, there's also legacy stuff here, right? Women haven't been able to run the marathon for a long time. There's plenty of masters runners in that field. Yeah. The plenty of masters runners in that field who weren't able to run marathons when they were 25. So there's also legacy stuff here. Again, we're not going to litigate that here. My point is, there's no perfect way of doing this. And while you feel this pang of, I was wronged, it's not a personal thing, even if you are experiencing it on a personal level.
Exactly. And like you said, it's part of the process to want to find somebody else to blame. And at the end of the day, these things happen. It's not personal. That doesn't make it any less hard. Like, you still, I tell everybody, feel what you need to feel. Kick rocks for a day or a few days, but then it's time to kind of get moving, because otherwise you're letting it take more from you than it deserves to. Like, don't let it ruin your week or your month or your year. You have so many other things you can be doing with that time and energy than while women are, you know, hurting this sport and all of those things and the lovely takes that I've seen on comment sections today. Fun fact, 3,000 more men were accepted than women. So I don't think it's totally a gender problem, but we don't go there. I had to throw that in there. We want to find somebody to blame. But at the end of the day, 22,000 people ran faster than those other 11,000 people in their respective age groups and genders. So how can we get better and get faster? And what can you control and what can you do?
Right. And ultimately, when you ran those races, you weren't thinking from a competition perspective. You were trying to get the most out of yourself. And on that day, you probably did. And you deserve all the flowers for that. Also, it doesn't make you any worse than the people who were accepted into the race, nor does it make you any better than the people who weren't accepted, who didn't hit the qualifying time.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just, we're all trying to do the best we can. And ultimately, I don't want to get too meta here, but sometimes we think we know what we want and we think we know what's going to be best for our future, but we don't. Okay. You don't know what's going to happen, right? Like, you might run a race in the spring that goes fantastically well for you. You might meet someone at that race that like becomes a lifelong friend or a spouse or whatever. Like all of a sudden you run this race and you're like, this is the greatest area of the country. I want to move here. Like, I can't tell you how many jobs I applied for that I, at the time, I felt like I was wronged and I should have gotten that job. Specifically head coaching college basketball jobs that I thought I deserved. I look who got the job. I couldn't believe that they got it over me. I was wronged. That should have been my job. Let me tell you, if I got any one of those jobs, I would not have met my wife, because I would have left Rhode Island and I wouldn't have met her. No way. Wouldn't have happened. Okay. My wife
is where you are now.
My wife would have lived in, has lived in a 15 mile radius her whole life. She wasn't moving. I wasn't going to find her in Northwestern Massachusetts. So again, I don't want to get too meta here, but you don't know what your future holds. So don't assume that this is the worst thing ever, because you just don't know. You just don't. And you might run another Boston. This also isn't the end of the line, unless you want it to be. And here's the thing.
Right.
If you make this so demotivating that it pulls you away from the sport, then you will not qualify for Boston. I can guarantee you that. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you'll ever qualify for Boston. Person in this group, the qualified but not accepted. I don't know. You run the rest of your life. I don't know if you'll ever qualify for Boston. But I do know this. If you stop running, you definitely won't qualify for Boston.
Very true.
Okay. So let's go into the final group. Not a ton to say about this, but I do want to approach it, because there are certain people who today, congratulations, you qualified, you applied, and you were accepted. And you're one of the 22,000 or so runners in that group who hopefully will be running in April. Again, congratulations to you. I think it's fantastic. Okay, now, you are potentially in the same group as the group we just talked about. For them, the high was qualifying, the low was today, right? The day that they found out what the buffer was. For this peak group, the high is today, right? I got in. The low could be race day, or it could be the day you get, you know, hamstring tendonitis on February 11th, and all of a sudden you can't run, okay? The same thing, everything we just said about that middle group goes for you people. You're just potentially on a different timeline, okay? Mm-hmm. So appreciate everything that has happened so far, but don't be so utterly focused on this one thing that whatever that any negatives that come down the line completely derail you. It might snow in April on marathon day. I'll tell you one thing. It's not going to be perfect weather, because that happens like once every 20 years. Okay. So you might have awful weather. You might lose your luggage. Your kid might be sick. I had someone who got COVID 36 hours before the race. They were already in Boston, right? 2 years ago, Nico Montañez thought he might be a top five American. He had to get dental surgery 18 hours before the race. He had to get emergency dental surgery. And this is his livelihood.
When I heard that, when I was listening to that episode. Oh.
Oh my God. It was painful. And so many things can happen. And they all will to somebody. Hopefully not you, dear listener, but to somebody. So set yourself up with that same, same feelings. Be happy, be ecstatic, be excited, but don't let any future negatives derail you from all the positives that have already happened. Okay. And I just want to put that out there. Enjoy the experience. Take it for all, whether you're having a celebratory run and not running your best that day on purpose, or you're out there to try to qualify for Boston at Boston, which is an audacious goal, and good luck to you. But no matter how you approach that day, you know, try to go into this entire experience with the same joy that you're feeling today. And don't be so hung up on, I want to make that the best experience possible, that any sort of negativity that could pop up can derail you from what could potentially be like a really good weekend for you. And even if it isn't, it doesn't change anything that's happened in the past.
Yeah. And one of my favorite, albeit cheesy, quotes, but very timely, and I think very applicable to something like this, is don't let success go to your head and don't let failure go to your heart. And I think that applies for both of the groups of don't let this failure be the be all end all, but don't let this success derail you from the fact that like you still need to do some work, focus on the process and, you know, set those small goals along the way. You know, those highs and lows that you're feeling, they're going to shift. You're going to have those different things. So give yourself some time to feel what you're feeling and then get back to work or get back to what you'd like to do, which is get out the door with friends and focus on the training cycle and setting some other goals and see how things go. Maybe you say, I just want to run Boston for experience, but maybe you get into March and you're like, man, I think I want to give this a shot and truly race it. Or maybe you have a great cycle and then all of a sudden you get sick or life happens and you say, you know what? I'm going to go out and celebrate the heck out of this because I am going to go run my first Boston Marathon. No matter what race you're training for, those are both always possibilities of good or bad, like you said.
All right, Laura, this was a lot of fun. I didn't think we were going to go a full hour. I feel really bad.
No, you're fine.
Do you have any last things that you want to say before we get out of here?
I think just everything that we've been talking about is don't let this limit you, good or bad. Just kind of keep at it, set some small goals, regardless of if you got in or if you didn't even qualify or if you missed. This doesn't need to be all the be all end all. Focus on the process and get back to work and get the best out of yourself, and the rest will kind of take care of itself.
That's exactly right. The Boston Marathon is great, it's fantastic, but you are more than what the Boston Marathon is. So whether you are not going to be running it or you are going to be running it, remember, you, your life, your running journey is more than the 2024 Boston Marathon. For good, bad, or neutral, that doesn't mean to be a demotivating statement. It just is. And that's okay. Yep. And that's the best part about it, because you're going to have plenty more ahead. And even if that's the last race you ever do, again, you'll have it. It doesn't have to be this, you know, closing the book chapter on your entire running journey, your entire running season, or anything like that. It can just be an interesting thing that happened, and then you move forward. And ultimately, if you're able to approach your running in a way that you have this constant gratitude for being able to run and try to go after it in a way that, you know, is tethered to your goals and what you want to get out of the sport, then you're going to be just fine. And if even at that, you're like, Matt, that's too hokey for me, I can't get down with that, well, then I will just leave you with this. Remember how you felt when you were injured the last time that was, whether that's right now, if you're listening to it, or 6 months ago or 4 years ago. Okay. Remember how you said, I guarantee you, either to yourself and or out loud, you would do anything just to be running. Okay. We've all been there. Just remember that feeling, because it's so easy to go back to that. So if you're running right now, that's a blessing. And just leave it at that. And if you can get more, wonderful. Get the most out of yourself. But it doesn't mean that it has to be to the detriment of your future running self. And that's what I want to leave you with. Because if today is one of those brutal days where you didn't get in the Boston Marathon, do not let it cripple you from what you want to do. Because the last thing you want to do, if you have regret today, imagine 7 years from now, where all of a sudden you didn't reach your running goals or your potential because you didn't get into the Boston Marathon in 2023. All of a sudden it's 2030 and you're looking back 7 years ago and being like, I can't believe I let that one day change the next era of my life. And that's the last thing you'd want.
Yep. I fully agree.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. It's always a pleasure. Laura, always great to have you on. Last thing is go Bills, right?
Go Bills.